What is going on, everybody, and welcome on in to Inside. Well, I guess I could just say Inside the Browns Beat. Welcome on Inside the Browns Beat. I don't want to be redundant about it. It's like we haven't done this forever. I'm your host, Michael Keefe. Joining me, my co-host, Fred Greetham, and we've got a great show planned for you. Our first three-time special guest joining us, and our first ever special guest jumping back in with us. Mark Schwab is going to join us in just a little bit as we get ready to talk about the Cleveland Browns after their rookie minicamp and everything else going on with the Browns. So welcome in. We're glad you're here. If you've got comments, topics, things that you want to address, please get in the comments, whether you're watching us on YouTube, Twitch, X, Facebook, wherever. Throw your questions in the comments. We will get to as many of them as we can throughout the show. But before we get into the meat and potatoes of the show, we are brought to you proudly here on the OBR streaming network. So get over to the OBR.com. Make sure you hit subscribe and become part of Cleveland's oldest and largest independent Browns coverage site anywhere in the land. And that's over at the OBR.com. Fred Greetham, welcome back in. Another week of Inside the Browns Beat. We've seen some rookies actually throw on some pads, throw on the orange and brown. How you doing, man?
Good. You know, getting able to see them, what they look like on the grass and run around and measure up and take the eyeball test and excited to talk about that and kind of what I saw and compared some things from the past, even last year. So yeah, exciting, you know, and schedule coming out tomorrow night and starting to leak out already. And Brown's going to stay home this year, not going overseas. So to me, that's not a bad thing right now. So, yeah, a lot going on. And even though it's mid-May and next week be the first time I get to see these rookies in practice with the veterans, you know, actually a week from today in the afternoon, we're going to be able to be out there and watch practice and then be on the show again next Wednesday night and report what's going on, what happened.
Yeah, I love it. Again, we'll get into it. We'll get into what we saw out there, get into some impressions, but we're going to kick things off with our special guest here, the first half of the show. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking with him. Again, you've seen him inside the Browns Beat a few times now. He always brings the energy and brings awesome stuff, awesome insight, great opinions. Most of the time, I agree with him. But let's bring him in right now from Channel 19 here in Cleveland. It's Mark Schwab. Mark, welcome back inside the Browns Beat.
I am honored to be the first three-time guest. Do I get like a shirt or a hat or anything for that, or you know, like a cheese stick or something?
Just some more stuff to put on your trophy shelf back there behind you. You know,
I probably need to angle this so we could see the full display of things that get sent to sports departments. Not as many bobbleheads as we used to get, but that's the place they go when we get something. Yeah.
I mean, my off the leash partner, they're gracious enough to let me come in there every week. So
we love having time. Good stuff.
And so, you know, wanted to continue to cross promote you. And we're just glad to have you here and talk about a little bit of May football, you know, actually seeing some people out on the field running around.
I know, right? This is silly season. You always hear silly season talked about as like the run up to the draft when you're in all this crazy. This is it for me with mini camp, and you get some of it with OTAs, but it's where you got like I saw a great tweet that totally summarized this for me. It was like a couple of days ago. It might have been from CBS, might have been from NFL. I can't remember, but it was from Cardinal mini camp, and they had Carson Beck. And they did looking like he belongs. They had the stupid eyeball emojis. And then there's a video of Carson Beck in a t-shirt and shorts. And he's taking like steps around. And there's a coach on him. And then he's throwing the receivers defended by air. Right? Oh, I can't believe he looks great. You know what I mean? He's got absolutely nobody coming at him with receivers being defended by nothing. Look how awesome he is. And we hear about this, you know, and this, that we're going to talk about the Browns rookies because that's all we have to go on is what we just saw. But everyone is great. Everyone looks like a steal of the draft. I mean, how bad do you have to be like, oh my gosh, you should have seen this dude. This is silly season for me because everyone's going to be amazing for the time being anyway.
I love the comment. The comment here from James Frank on Facebook says they were saying that he out there, Carson Beck looked like Joe Burrow out there.
Of course.
Camp. So
imagine what Joe Burrow looks like.
I think Cardinals for the Super Bowl, in my opinion, get out of here.
Go for it.
Well, that's the thing. All these guys were the big man on campus. They were the star wherever they're from, you know. And so even as there was 25 tryout players with the Browns, and I mean, they were all the big guy wherever they were from in high school and even in college many times. So, yeah, it is. It's the NFL hype machine to just keep the thing hyping year round. And we're going to see another thing. Where have you seen as much hype about a schedule as there is in the NFL? I mean, I don't even know when they put the Guardian schedule out. You know, it's like, oh, here's your schedule. Same thing with the Cavs, you know, and it's like this thing is like trickled out, leaking out the international games, and it's crazy. And they got a special show on their networks for it.
The league has continued to do a great job to market itself, and they've realized how much Americans love their football in the NFL, that they can take anything and make it an event. The schedulers, you're right. If you did that in the NBA or Major League Baseball, literally no one would watch. But they've got it now where their February is kind of like combine month, and they've turned that into an event. March is when you get free agency. April is the draft. They're like, what can we do with May? Schedule release. Is that going to be maybe as big of the draft? No, but it is the next thing. They can do the run-up and specials. And since this is the NFL and this is what we do in this country, and you know, whether you're a huge fan or in this case, you know, we're going to talk about it and cover it. Of course, we're going to pay attention. And then we're going to talk about, you know, what we're going to do, the dumb thing where we're like, oh, I've got them at 9 wins. I think they're going to be this and this, this. And we're all full of crap because that's what we have to do is talk about it. We will. We'll do that. But the NFL knows we'll do it because this is what people care about. You know, is the NFL. Baseball is America's passion. Baseball is America's pastime. Football is America's passion. We eat, sleep, breathe it. The rest of the world doesn't care. We don't care. All y'all have soccer. We have NFL football. This is what we do. This is what we do. We'll get locked in on a schedule and talk about who we think the Browns are going to beat and when and where.
Fred, I love that. Oh. I love that you brought up the baseball schedule because it got me thinking how right you are. I see the Guardian schedule when I go to opening day and they hand me that magnet schedule. That's the first time I see the Guardian schedule. And then I can come home and put it on the beer fridge in the garage. And then I'm like, oh, who are the Guardians playing like next week?
Yeah.
That's the first time I even see that schedule.
Well, and it's because it's an event, you know, it's like 10 games in baseball is like one in football, you know? So the football, even though they have 17 now, it's still an event, you know, it's the whole week for one game. And, you know, and that's one of the things that people don't pay attention, you know, a lot until game day, you know, and they pay attention more because of fantasy football and all the extracurriculars. But you know, that is the thing about when we talked about teams are never the way they are now when the schedule comes out. They're never like that in the fall. It just seems like the W's you put, like we'll probably play the schedule game on off the leash next week because that's just the thing you do.
Yep.
You know, and you pick win, loss. And when you get to this season, there's teams that were a sure loss that are bad. And they're sure, and it's the opposite. It's crazy how that goes, you know, it never comes out right. And I guess that's the hope that fans have, that things might go their way. And this guy you drafted might be the savior of the team.
It reminds me, the schedule game kind of reminds me of the mock draft that comes out in February when you've got to do it, even though you know free agency is going to completely nuke what everyone thinks will happen, and you can never account for trades. The schedule game, you can't account for who got hurt on another team, who just for some reason is having a bad year. It's chaos when you talk about the lack of information we'll have, but we'll take a stab at it. We'll see what we can do with it.
Well, and all the people that get all hyped up about strength of schedule.
It's useless.
Oh, the strength of schedule for the Browns. Oh, the strength. Did you see how many teams that didn't make the playoffs 2 years ago made it last year?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see how many teams that were really good 2 years ago that were kind of sucked last year? It's every year these things change and players move and people get hurt. And the strength of schedule thing, next to the NFL Combine, I think the strength of schedule conversation is, to me, the dumbest one that happens in the NFL.
It's way up there on my list. It's way up there on my list. There are things I think you can look for. Like when you get the schedule, the first thing I look at is, of course, duh, who do they open with? Right. Immediately then my next look is who do they close with? Then what do they have the last like 2, 3, 4 games of the year in case they're actually in this thing and it's important? Then I'm looking for when the bye week is. And then I'm looking for just anything weird. Is there a stretch where they've got like 4 or 5 at home or 4 or 5 on the road?
Right.
Or are they like when they have Baltimore in back-to-back games one time? Or maybe they play one time they were in New York, I think, back-to-back weeks or something.
Yes.
I'm looking for anomalies. There are things you can get out of it, but I don't think you should be looking at, you know, that's who they can beat, that's a loss, that's a win. If you're looking for things that can really be relevant, you know, last game of the year, are you in Cincinnati when it might be a, you know, 12 degrees with a ton of wind and you got to win it? Could you be at home in that case? Do you have a cozy indoor game against Minnesota? And you know what I mean? That's the kind of stuff I want to look for. Open, close, final stretch, when's the bye, and is there anything weird here?
Well, and you have, to your point, sometimes it's when you play these teams. I mean, you still look at last year, we knew those first 6 games, you know, were going to be, you had the NFC North, you know, which were coming off, they were all like double-digit wins with the Lions, and the Bears were like the weakest, and they turned out to be one of the best, and the Vikings, and, and you're playing all them Packers in the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, and your season was shot pretty much, and the same thing the year before. They started out 1-6, and the season was shot. So there is a little bit getting it going on who you play. And if you can, you know, you think of the last time the Browns played this division, the NFC South, they opened against Baker Mayfield and the Panthers.
Yeah.
And they went on, you know, and had a good year. And, you know, you got a little bit of momentum going. And so that's the other thing this year. Now the NFC South might really be good. But last year, their division champion had a losing record. They were 8-9. The Panthers were. And when you can get a little bit, last year doesn't really matter going forward. But there's only 3 teams that had winning records last year on their schedule. Now, I realize the Bengals, you can kind of throw theirs out. If Joe Burrow doesn't go down, you know, they probably would have won the division, in my opinion. And, you know, and I know Mark's happy they got Dexter Lawrence and they've made moves they've never made. And so I think the Bengals are formidable. The Steelers and the Ravens have new first-year coaches, so anything could happen. You never can assume a team's going to be immediately good with a new head coach. The Browns have 8 games against teams with first-year head coaches. So if you played a lot of them early – you could get wins maybe before a team even gets their thing. Now, I realize the Browns are one of those teams, too, with a new coach. So there's a lot of variables playing that fourth place schedule also, you know.
Yeah.
That does make a difference in some divisions when you play the fourth place team as opposed to the second or third or whoever it is. So that there's always – hope at this time of year, and I'm sure tomorrow night when the schedule comes out, there'll be a lot of scheduled games going on. And what we see here, 13-4, you were talking about Mike, the turnaround. I think last year 5 of the 11 teams in the 2025 draft that drafted in the top 11 had winning records in last season. I'm talking about, I guess I meant the 2024. So they were drafting in the top 11 in the 25 draft, and they turned it around. One of them was Jacksonville. Everybody thought, oh, the Jackson Browns are going to get a really good pick, and they go 13-4 or something, and or 12-5, and the Browns get the 24th pick in the first round. So That's the variables that are at play.
So, guys, let's talk about, again, what we saw this past weekend. Because, Mark, you laid it out perfectly when you talked about how the NFL is really good at just, boom, this is going to happen this month. Boom, this is going to happen this month. So we did the draft, and it was exciting. It was fun. It was fun to hear all the no matter what. Listen, no matter what, as a Browns fan, it's fun to hear when everybody's like, wow, the Browns 2 years in a row look like sure. They really have figured it out. Draft. That's fun to hear. It's fun to hear.
Absolutely.
Everybody's excited about the draft. We finally get to see some of these guys put on some of the pads. So, guys, let's start talking about what we saw out there. We saw Spencer Fano, his brother, Logan Fano, who I would imagine is going to make this team as they gave him a contract. You got a couple other guys in that undrafted room. You saw some of the wide receivers out there. Emmanuel McNeil Warren, I think, looked like they were giving him a little bit of a leadership role out there amongst a lot of the rookies. So, I don't know, guys. What stood out to you, if anything, from what we saw in Berea? Fred, you talked last year about Carson Schlesinger really standing out during that rookie minicamp. And obviously, we know the year that he had. So what kind of standout things happened out there in Berea with the Browns this year?
Well, you know, the eyeball test is the only thing really that it's the first time to put your eyeballs on them, and they're not in pads. They're not really anything going on. In fact, for the rookies, it's more of an orientation. They're just trying to get them up to speed. So when the veterans come in next week, they're not lost. And all in prepping for training camp. So with that said, in 2025 at this time, I zeroed in on the top four. Mason Graham, Carson Schlesinger, Quinshon Judkins, and Harold Fannin. Because in reality, if you swing at a fifth, sixth, seventh and get something, great. But that isn't the point. You can't say we were counting on getting that seventh rounder to be the key to our team. So Schlesinger did. He caught my eye immediately. There's just something about him reminding me back to 57 Clay Matthews, not the one that played in Green Bay, his dad. It just carried himself like a football player in old school. And it translated into NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. Now, I'm not saying these guys will all be like that, but it did stand out to me a year ago. And Harold Fannin looked like a good player. Judkins, who saw him at Ohio State, knew that guy was a good player. And it's hard to, like a Graham, to even evaluate him, you know, in those situations. But this year, again, I was looking at the first four with Spencer Fano. Looks the part, moving around well. Obviously, he's just blocking pretty much a dummy, one of the other players holding one up. But he moved around. He looked the part, the size, the speed. And then the two wide receivers, Casey Concepcion and Denzel Boston, they both, you know, were as advertised, the big, tall, rangy receiver in Boston that would go up and get the ball. We even saw that in some of the, even though he's going against air, and Concepcion, the stop on the dime playmaking. And I saw him drop a pass here and there. And as I talked on Off the Leash, is that you can live with that when a guy makes 25 touchdowns, you know? So, and then EMW, Emmanuel McNeil Warren, just looked the part. I mean, 6'3", he's a big safety, you know, and you envision him, could he be like a Kyle Hamilton, you know, with that size back there? He was around the ball a lot, and that's what was advertised there. So those four guys looked the part. I don't know what'll happen when they go up against the veterans and start doing it, but there's some other ones that are intriguing. Parker Brailsford could end up being the starting center, and they got him in the fifth round. And so, and of course that quarterback, you know, Talon Green, I mean, your eyes go to him immediately, first of all, cause he's a quarterback, but he's 6'5", 6'6", 227, got a big arm. And when he started running the 11 on 11, you go, that guy can fly, you know? So you're like, there's gotta be, there's some tools there that you just can't create, you know, you can't coach the speed and the arm and those type of things. So that's, I zeroed in on the draft picks because it was pretty much the first time to see them. And, again, they passed the eyeball test to me. Doesn't mean they're going to be as productive as last year's class. But I'm most excited about it because, not that we've been pushing it, but we've talked about it on here. You got to get the offense turnaround. And what did they use? They used the first three picks on offensive players at positions we thought they obviously needed. And believe it or not, they obviously felt they needed that. It's not ever too often, coalesce that way. So those were some impressions, right off the bat there.
I would say I wasn't out there. I didn't get out there, but just a little bit I saw. What I really liked is hearing everything we heard about, kind of what Fred just said about, especially about the receivers, but like Denzel Boston might've been my favorite pick they made. And just seeing him actually in pads, like he is a tower. Like sometimes, you hear these guys are big and then maybe they get in. He's big, but that dude's big. He stands out. Big ol' X, put him out there. It was great to hear those guys making plays, but also just like, okay, yeah, that dude is a large man. He can go up and catch the football. It was good to see that actually translated to an NFL, even if it was just a practice field, that dude is large.
Yeah, yeah. It, to me, again, Fred, from a lot of what you've talked about and guys, what we've talked about, just going back to the Carson Beck conversations, Denzel Boston better look good in rookie minicamp. Casey Concepcion better look electric during rookie minicamp. Spencer Fano better be able to block that practice dummy. EMW, although again, I will say I saw a couple clips where it looked like they really kind of put him in a leadership spot with the rookies. Like you're one of the top defenders out here with all the rookies. We want you to take a leadership role. I think that's good. But for me, I'm trying to see, and really, Talen Green, I love that they made the pick. And tell me your guys' thoughts on this. Because I've seen a lot of people with Talen Green be like, well, he's – all you got to do is unlock this or that. And 6'5", and he runs a 4.3 40, and he's got all these crazy traits. And, like, he definitely is going to be the third quarterback on this roster. And I am not sold on that in the slightest because he's – 6'5", and has wild physical traits, and yet still dropped to the sixth round of the draft for a reason, and that's because he has to play quarterback, and all those elite traits have to lead into a guy that knows how to play quarterback, and I think sometimes people overlook that when you're talking 6'5", and a 4.3 40. He's got a lot of work to do, boys. He's got a lot of work to do.
If you look up the pros and cons on many of his scouting reports, most of the pros are about how athletic he is, and most of the cons are about all the problems he has passing. Traditionally, that does not end well for somebody who's a quarterback prospect. So here's the way I would phrase this. And obviously, we're all rooting for him. We want him to be good because this has been a huge problem, as everyone knows, for the Browns. But how often does the quarterback who is drafted strictly because he's athletic, how often does he turn into an NFL quarterback? Not often. I mean, you can say Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts was a second-round pick. You could say Malik Willis might. Willis might. He was a third-round pick. That's still day two.
Well, he still hasn't. He hasn't turned into anything.
And
yet.
You're right. He might have a shot. How often does a guy drafted in the sixth or seventh round, based on traits, who's athletic, but can we teach him to pass? How often does he actually turn into an NFL quarterback? About never. And before that, and because of that, I just don't think this is going to work out. But of course, in the meantime, it'll be fun to talk about. He's going to be a lot of fun to watch when he gets out there and decides to pull it down. But I don't know if you can coach him up to pass at a level to be an actual NFL quarterback. It's more likely this is a dude who's a gadget guy and maybe he makes some plays and is fun to watch with the ball in his hand.
And listen, it's not – you said it right. I don't bring that up because I think anything bad about him. I hope to God he's one of those outside – like one of those long-shot guys that actually – oh my gosh, the traits are going to turn into a good quarterback. I just see a lot of people being like, well, he's clearly going to be like your number three guy. And I'm I think you need to really prepare yourself for the practice squad for Talen.
Yeah. I mean, he turned the ball over 37 times in college. I saw him fumble, an exchange, and the biggest thing there is the raw physical characteristics. But to your point, there's a reason he's been playing football for a while and he's still got the same, you know, shortcomings. And so I think you would be, we know Andrew Berry early in his tenure of picking the 53 loved to get away and try to only have two quarterbacks on the roster. You can remember back when Watson first got here, he traded the backup quarterback, Josh Dobbs, because he fell in love with DTR in the preseason. So you went into that season with only two quarterbacks. You had Watson and DTR. And DTR, we know what happened when Watson got hurt and couldn't play in that Ravens game. It was a disaster. And I already have said this several times. Get ready. If in the preseason we know that it's mop-up time for these rookies, and I believe Taylen Green's going to play like crazy. Now, there could be a little difference because Gabriel hasn't played a lot and Shadur hasn't played a lot, and I don't know how they're going to do this. But get ready. Taylen Green, when he's playing against the bottom of the roster, guys that are going to be working other jobs after preseason, he's going to run away from them, and everybody's going to be talking about him like they did DTR. That this guy's got to be the starter. This guy is the quarterback, because we all remember a lot of stories, you know, guys that were phenomenal in the preseason and then were duds. And so that's where they're – what they're going to do with him. I ultimately think he could end up being like a Terrell Pryor. You know, Terrell Pryor, you know, didn't have a great career – but he did have a 1,000-yard receiving year with the Browns. He should have stayed with the Browns, but he thought he was going to get a bigger contract and flamed out. But as far as the physical tools, I don't know if Green can catch the ball. I don't know if any of that. But if he really can run and score touchdowns, you know, they'll find a way even if he can't necessarily be a quarterback.
Mark, your opinion on just a couple other quick things here with the rookies. I think one of the more interesting, even though it's not the most interesting position group to talk about, but Fred brought up the offensive line, and they draft Parker Brailsford, who I have a lot of opinions actually on Parker Brailsford. Why am I blanking on the kid from Florida, the tackle, the third rounder,
Austin Barber?
Barber. God. I want to keep calling him Brooks for some reason, and I'm like, that's not right. Austin Barber, and he's got the greatest draft call video of all time, and I don't know why I just blank on his name all the time. But when you see what they did there at the offensive line, and obviously they spent their entire offseason retooling the offensive line, whether via trade or free agency or whatever, what do you make, Mark, of those two picks, and how soon you think they are kind of hoping those guys can contribute?
Well, I mean, the whole thing with Brailsford really is weird because we're still waiting on this shoe to drop with Joel Bitonio, who impacts that guy. Because if Bitonio is here at guard, you figure Elgton Jenkins is the center, right? And then we're not talking about Parker as a starter. But if Bitonio's not back, Elgton Jenkins is the guard, and now you're wondering who is going to be the center. So that's cool. I mean, it's still weird to me that we're into May. We're still talking about this. But, yes, I love that they got aggressive with left tackle. And now, and with Barber especially, as another tackle, you also wonder, what does this do with DeJuan Jones? Is DeJuan Jones a swing tackle? Right? Is Barber the swing tackle? There's a lot of flexibility. All the guys they got in the offseason have positional flexibility. Right? I talked about Jenkins can be center or guard. Tytus Howard can play guard. He had a year at guard for the Texans. So there's a lot of moving parts. I love that they got aggressive with it. It was kind of like a kill it with fire kind of thing, like they did with receiver in the draft. I do believe with offensive line, I think people talk about you need these five stars. You don't need five studs. You can't have five trash cans, right? But you can have like four pretty good players. You can have like two stars, three stars, two pretty good players, maybe one pretty good player, and one guy that's kind of like, You know, you can get by with that. But especially if Petonio gets back, they could have five rock stars up there, right? You talk about number one picks and big money free agents. So it's hard for me to know what they are because we don't know if they're going to have a kid in there yet, whether it's Brailsford or whoever it is. But I do know, and we were talking about this on our draft show on 19 after the draft, is these guys are going to need time to gel, whoever that is. And that's probably going to take into the regular season. So I do think even if everyone stays healthy all year, the offensive line will look different by week 10, by week 12, by week 14 than it does in week one or two, just because of all the communication and chemistry that's required. I'd love it if Petonio's back. Even if he is back, I think that's going to be an issue because of so many new moving parts. But they did everything they could to this point, right? They killed it with fire. They were aggressive. And now they've just got to let the thing play out and let this thing build.
Well, and that's, yeah, you know, I mean, go ahead, Fred.
I was just saying, seven offensive linemen. You talk about overhauling the offensive line. Instead of counting on DeJuan Jones like they did last year, they didn't really bring in anybody. It just said, well, he's the left tackle. Well, he had three games in his career that he started there with the Browns, and he'd been injured. So I like that they're making him now compete to even be a backup. And so you have all the moves. You drafted three guys, a first, a third, and a fifth. And I think Brailsford – you know, I'm old enough to remember Mike Babb was a good center for the Browns. They drafted him in the fifth round, you know, and Jason Kelsey was a pretty good center drafted in the fifth round. He started as a rookie. If Brailsford ends up being able to handle it and start, that's like a outlier great draft pick, because a guy like that could be 10-year starter along with Fano, you know, and so you've really – but you have the assurance, if he's not ready, you still have Elgton Jenkins or even Luke Whipler. And so I've been harping on it for 2 years, fix the offensive line and wide receiver. And lo and behold, this year they apparently have done that. Now, we don't know till we see it, but, you know, I just think that the more you have – and here will Charles Bentley say that he thinks Barber, third round pick, can be like Ryan Tucker. Well, anybody that followed the Browns, he's a pretty good right tackle for the Browns.
Oh, yeah.
If Barber can be the right tackle with Fano at the left side and Brailsford in the middle, you have a really good makings of a very young, up and coming offensive line.
Well, fingers crossed for all that. Mark, before we let you get back to work here tonight on this beautiful Wednesday, you talked about these special events that happen monthly in the NFL. So obviously the schedule comes out tomorrow, which means, because again, who really cares about what order they play these teams in? But it does mean that we are going to get the videos from these teams. And that is a highlight. That's a highlight. These schedule release videos, when the Browns did Pete Weber a couple years ago, that was outrageous.
Oh,
outrageous,
yeah.
Stuff. So if you were Mark, if you were designing Schwab, you're a creative guy. You're an energetic guy.
You're gonna put me on the spot.
If you were designing the Browns, what would your I think they did pro wrestling last year. Did the Browns? What would your idea be for the schedule release video?
You're putting me on the spot. Uh-huh. I'm not a marketing guy. Let's see. What do we got? You want to kind of play into current events if you can. Although I guess none of those are real popular right now.
Yeah, you may want to stay away from that.
You know, yeah, we're going to avoid that. We haven't.
How about a UFC fight or something?
There could be that. Maybe you play on the alien. No, I don't know. Pro wrestling is a good one, but they took that.
Right, it's done.
It's done, so you can't do that. I'm always about. I love a road trip, a summer road trip. So I don't know if you can make it there. Maybe, you know, like a road trip kind of thing.
Love that.
Maybe that. The road trip would look weird, though. Every other week, you got to drive back to Cleveland.
You're right. Yeah.
So I don't know. Off the top of my head, I would go something like that, I guess. That might be where I'm going.
Well, it'll be exciting to see what they come out with. Schwabi, it's been fun catching up with you for the last half hour or so, talking about the Browns, these young players, rookie camp, and everything we can learn from it. You go back to work, enjoy the rest of your night, and we will catch up with you next time we have you inside the Browns beat.
You got it. And tip off here in about a half hour. Go Cavs.
Let's go Cavs. Let's go.
Thanks, see you, Swabby.
Take care, appreciate guys. It.
Big shout out to Mark Schwab, Channel 19 here in Cleveland. Yes, tip off Cavs about a half hour. I cannot wait for that. See if they can get a road win. Just good stuff there. And again, just trying to figure out, Fred, let's go back to rookie minicamp, because again, do I think rookie minicamp matters all that much for Spencer Fano? No. I mean, you want to see that he's picking up what the coaches are throwing at him. You want to see that KC and Boston. Yeah, okay, fine. But were there any other guys in your time that you got to actually spend a little time watching? Again, we talked about this, I think it was even last week, that we talked about some of these undrafted guys, or some of these guys that got invitations that weren't even undrafted rookie free agents, just guys that got invited to the rookie camp. I know last week we talked about some of the cornerbacks. I know Michael Coates, a lot of people have some pretty high hopes for Michael Coates out of West Virginia, the cornerback. We talked about Logan Fano, Spencer's brother, Tyreek Sapp, the defensive end out of Florida, that was, again, rated as like a first-round player a couple years ago and then had injuries and then fell out of the draft. So were there any other guys when you were standing out there watching that you went, oh, okay, hold on a minute, this guy just seems to move at a different rate or a different speed than the rest of these other guys?
You know, it was interesting because Pete Smith wrote about six guys to look for, and one of them, the Browns, there was reports, we had them on our site, that the agent or the player or something said they signed with the Browns, and there was like 15 undrafted rookie free agents. Well, two of those guys weren't signed. Mike Coates wasn't there the first day, and then the second day they sent out a release said we've added Mike Coates. And so he was there the second day. So you're like, okay, what happened? Did he really not agree to terms, or hadn't he got in to sign the contract, or what? So I only got to see him one day. Quick, you know, I watched him and put out a little video on him wearing number 39, smaller guy, but I think they list him at 5'9". I don't know. He's probably 5'8". But then there was another one, a wide receiver, Aaron Anderson. Where's he from? I think he was from LSU.
Yeah.
He was a tryout player. We reported somewhere it said that he was signed, and he wasn't. He was just invited as a tryout player. I saw some quickness with him. I saw him make a play. Now, some of these guys might have been, you know, they might have been added by now. They haven't announced it, but they had 53 guys there, believe it or not. You had 10 draft picks, 13 after Coates. So you had 23 counting the 13 undrafted. So that's still only 23. You're allowed to bring back, I think, five first-year players that were on the practice squad. So then they had 25 tryout players.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, Mike, was frankly so they would have enough to do all the 11-on-11s and to have the quarterbacks have somebody other than Taylen Green making the throws. They brought in Bryson Barnes. He was from Utah State, quarterback. Yep. My eyes were on the draft picks. I mean, as far as, like I said, you could tell looking at a guy like Spencer Fano versus a guy that was an undrafted or a tryout player, and almost at all the positions. But another one that kind of intrigued me a little was Jalen Reagor. 6-year veteran. He was a former number one draft choice. He was kind of like a little stuck out because he's like 27 years old. And it's like, what's going on with this guy? But he was in for a tryout, watched him a little bit, can move. I kind of like put him in the category of Deontay Johnson. Remember last year?
Yep.
Deontay was invited to those, and they ended up taking him to training camp. He didn't make the team. But last year, that was like their only addition. You know, they didn't add anybody in free agency or the draft. They brought in Deontay Johnson. Well, there's a little more competition, you know, for Jalen Reagor. So I don't know if he'll even make it to training camp, but he was in for a tryout. So that was kind of a interesting story. But yeah, that sap you talked about, the defensive end, he built to me more like a defensive tackle. He was like stout looking. But they listed him at, I think, 6'2". 260 or something, or wasn't that big. It seemed so. That was kind of interesting there to see him. Now, Justin Jefferson, they got him listed as 6'2", 223. He looks like a safety to me. I don't think he's 6 foot. He looked like he was like 5'10". And he was talking a lot for a, for a fifth round draft pick. He was like trash talking all over the place. And even in his interview time, he said, you know, I'm looking forward to something to the effect of beating out Quincy Williams and Carson Schlesinger. And so you like that attitude, but I'm like, okay, I don't think the first day of rookie mini camp, you're ready to say that you're up to beat him out. But, you know, different things like that. Barber looks the part. I mean, he's every bit of 6'7", 320. He's got a little nastiness. You could see him in our interview. He was asked that if he got in a lot of fights, and he said, yeah. He's that guy that kind of, I don't know if he trash talks or just keeps pushing, you know, after the whistle or what, but he looks like he's going to be a chippy type player, and I don't think it's the place and time to be doing that in rookie minicamp, but we'll see. So you like that, some of that stuff. I don't know anybody else. It's, I mean, Logan Fano, I think Spencer, when he was the first guy interviewed, I think he asked if he could bring his brother up there, because I don't think the PR department necessarily said everybody wants to talk to Logan, but Spencer and him, you can tell, are very close. And I think that would, not that they would keep him on the team if he's not a good player, but I think that would really help, you know, Spencer having his older brother there. You know, even they talked about their apartment or something, or the hotel. They were two doors away, and you know, it was cool to go down, and they were reminiscing about growing up and how they competed and beat, had fights with between themselves just about every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think that that's a good thing. I think that will help a rookie like Spencer Fano, you know, and he gets beat by a defensive end or whatever, just, you know, to keep him grounded and so forth. And so there's a lot of interesting things in there. It's hard to pick out too many particulars because your eyeballs are going in the time on the main players, at least of that. It's even more of a challenge when everybody gets there, especially in training camp when you got 90 you're trying to keep an eye on. But I just say that's some of the thoughts and that came about. I like what I saw. Royer, he looks like he can catch the ball. Ryan looks like he could be a good blocking tight end as well. He felt like he was kind of overlooked, so that's always good when you have a guy with a chip on his shoulder coming in, getting drafted in the seventh round. So I'm intrigued to see more, you know, next week for sure.
Fred, I think, you know, with you being there year in and year out, I think this year it'll be a repetitive question starting now, or maybe starting with the voluntary camp, but certainly starting now with the rookie mini camp, then going into the next one. And then finally, as we get into, you know, July, August, and we're in full on training camp and preseason and all that stuff. But I think a hot button conversation And so I want to hear your opinion on any perceivables, at least, are just going to be the differences between, you know, the past 6 years with Kevin Stefanski and how he ran things. And now with Todd Monken, and again, a guy that's been around for a long, long time as a coach, but as a guy who is doing this for the first time and who I think all of us are seeing some pretty major personality differences between him and Kevin. So just what were your opinions on that out there this week or this last weekend with the rookies? Did you notice any perceivable differences from what you saw the way Kevin Stefanski would treat that process versus how Todd Monken treated things?
Well, before I go into it a little, I couldn't help. I saw some clips from Kevin's press conferences after his mini camp practices with the rookies. And I was like, I knew what he was going to say, you know, when they'd ask him questions. I'm like, holy moly. Todd Monken's refreshing, at least in that aspect. I mean, so far he's been pretty much tells you know what he's thinking. As far as practices now, I've seen one OTA the OTA, and then they had that one open practice the week of the draft with veterans at minicamp, and then two rookies. And the first one I saw, I think it was supposed to be, we thought it was going to be an hour and a half. It went nearly 2 hours. And he didn't quite go that long with the rookies, but I see him stopping a lot and teaching. And as I said before, the rookie mini camp is really about orientation. Sure, it's getting them out on the field, but it's really getting them ready for next week when the veterans come, so they know what they're doing. They're not lost. And then ultimately for the mandatory mini camp early in June, when they get ready to take off for training camp. And so some things I've seen, I think this is just me right now, what I've seen, I think he's going to have longer practices. I think he's going to have more physical practices. I think I wouldn't be surprised if they hit. I wouldn't be surprised if they tackle to the ground. Kevin Stefanski really didn't want to do that stuff. You heard a lot of the players really defend Kevin, and that's okay. A lot of it is he would be called what I would say a player's coach. They loved him because they got a lot of off days, especially if they were veterans. And they were over on the bicycles and kind of hanging out with the trainer or and there's a place for that. But John Harbaugh is kind of known for being more of a tough, physical-minded coach. And I saw, I don't know what player it was, somebody was kind of ripping on Harbaugh for his practices, that he was too hard on practice. I wouldn't be surprised if Monken is like that too. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they hit in training camp and even in and he plays starters in the regular or in the preseason. Kevin was more like, I want to get him to the season healthy. And I get that school of thought. But then we always saw the Browns always had the most injuries. And I don't know, it's because they weren't ready, they weren't tough or what, or just bad luck. But those are some of the things I'm seeing, is that I think he's going to be a little tougher than what we've seen the last 5-6 years. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but with a younger team, I think some discipline could go a long way, you know? And there, I just do think, you know, he's going to be facing things for the first time, but the way he's been running things, in fact, they did a lot of walkthroughs with Stefanski and we weren't allowed to watch walkthroughs. I don't know why, but what I've seen in practice, Monken, I don't know if he's doing a lot of walkthroughs, but what he's doing on the field, he goes into sessions where they take their helmets off and they go through like 11 on 11 running pattern, running plays, but without their helmets off, I think obviously the players are all cognizant, so they're not hitting each other, but it's more of a, it's maybe it's not full speed, but it's definitely more than a walkthrough. It's a teaching time. So that's different. I never really saw that before where they took their helmets off, but had their jerseys and everything on out there and they're running through the plays. But we'll have to wait and see. But I do think that it's going to be tougher. I think the practices might be a little more demanding. It just does seem like if they get something wrong or it's not going the way he likes it, he stops them, brings them in, and they have a teaching time, kind of like a teaching timeout. And so, you know, who knows if it's the right way, the wrong way, but he is, to me, a little more old school, you know, as far as is the impression I'm getting. And even with in talking to the media, you know, he's pretty straightforward with things, and this is the way it goes. And he said several times, they're not like Taylen Green, you know, all the questions, cause he's a quarterback, and you know, and what he was showing is like, you're going to get reps. And he goes, well, these guys aren't going to all get reps. He's getting them now. He's probably not going to get reps at OTAs, you know? And so I don't think it's going to be like this 4-man quarterback competition, like we had everybody charting the reps last year. I don't even think it's necessarily going to be that with more than two of them. And if he has his way, I don't know if when by the time they get to the veteran mini camp, if he'll have one guy then, or they'll go through kind of splitting it up and then go to training camp, naming somebody, you know, with the reps, because he talks about there's only so many reps, and he's not worried about the reps that guys that are in the back of the depth chart are getting.
Well, and again, there's just a little common sense nature to that that sometimes I think gets lost when we just do straight, you know, what do we want to see? Very much fan conversation, which is just the nuance of, listen, this is what's happening now, but don't read too much into what's happening right this second. Yeah. So again, we've seen the rookies out there now. We've seen all the videos of them getting into the room. And if you didn't see the Denzel Boston video where they were showing him his locker and he was next to Myles Garrett, so he had to take a picture so he could send it to all of his friends. That was kind of a cool moment in there. Elsewhere in Browns news, there's not a lot of it, not a ton of Browns news, but there's been a lot of just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with some Browns that were here last year, and we don't know what's going to happen next year. So we did see one of those dominoes fell, Fred, in that David Njoku signed a 1-year deal to go out to the Chargers. And I think the longer this went on where he didn't sign somewhere, it always kind of felt like, well, maybe David Njoku's going to be back making some kind of moves here or there with the Cleveland Browns next year. But in the end, the letter was right. You know, he did the whole write a letter to Cleveland, thank you for everything, which is great. I think David Njoku is in. I think David, I'm not calling him an all-time great player for the Browns, but I think he's an all-time great, like, dog pound type guy for the Cleveland Browns. Yeah, man, he wound up just absolutely becoming the bell of the ball, basically, here in Cleveland with the fans and with the way he talked about the city and loved the city and the organization. But he moves on to the Chargers. Again, just a 1-year deal and not big money for David Njoku. So we got that first domino to fall. I know Joel Bitonio is the one that everybody continues to bring up that I feel like, for me, I felt like, you tell me how you feel, I felt like every day that went by with Njoku, I felt like, oh, maybe there is a chance that they find a way to get him back for another year. For me, with every day that goes by with Bitonio, I feel like he's not coming back. Like, yeah, just feel that.
I'm feeling like they've moved on. They've had to plan without him. In fact, obviously there's room for Joel Bitonio, but I mean, you signed two guards to big money, and you would almost have to move Elgton Jenkins, you know, back to center, just so he can, so you have room for Bitonio. They've added seven new guys, and we're not counting Bitonio. Also, I can think either he doesn't want a fanfare announcing his retirement, or he maybe is saying, you know, I really don't want to go to training camp, or I don't want to do the off season program, or whatever it is. And just, I thought maybe they'd get to the draft, and after the first 2 days, you were talking about Njoku, before they drafted two tight ends, I thought maybe they could revisit with Njoku or Martin Emerson. They didn't draft any cornerbacks. But then they attacked the offensive line the first couple rounds.
Right.
Well, actually, it was tackles. So I had somebody tell me, kind of a source, saying, why are you guys talking about Betonio? Or, you know, like, they've kind of moved on. I mean, they're saying the right things, but I have to feel like he had to have said, hey, I think you can count me in. I mean, or don't count on me, you know, right, type of a thing, you know. He's probably enjoying playing golf. The last time I saw a picture of him, he looked like he had kind of getting into the Joe Thomas look, you know, starting to thin down. So I don't know. I don't know if he's waiting till, you know, yeah, training camp or after, and seeing if he really misses it, you know, or just day by day going, you know. I don't think he's looking to see, you know, necessarily if somebody gets injured, you know, to come to go to a contender, you know, that type of a guy. I think he had indicated that if he played, it would be with the Browns, but who knows? I think that they all have lists of 30 something guys, emergency type guys, and I think they'll go to camp with pretty much what they have coming out of mini camp. The mandatory mini camp in June before training camp. That's when, if somebody gets hurt or one of the coaching positions said, hey, we need another cornerback, or we need another tight end, or a defensive player at some position, that's when they might go to the emergency list, because there are some, you know, pretty good name veterans out there in their 30s. But most of those guys are kind of sitting around waiting for the best opportunity. You saw that with Kareem Hunt the last couple of years. No training camp, nothing. He just kind of, okay, I go to the Chiefs, you know, and I just step right in, you know. And so there's guys like that, you know, and I don't know how Betonio's going to fit and all that. But I think they pretty much patched up most of their holes. Now it's just a matter of depth and injuries or different things that could happen, you know.
And, you know, finding the quarterback. That's the
great unsaid, you know, that they really didn't address that the whole offseason. Tells you they're just going to go with what they got. I don't know what else you can do at this point. And, no, Talon Green's not the – he's not the answer to being the starting quarterback this year.
As far as we know, Talon Green, probably not the answer to be the starter this year, but you never know. You never know what comes.
He might start a game.
He could.
Because the Browns have used, what, five quarterbacks,
four quarterbacks? P.J. Walker could start a game. DTR could start. We never know what's going to happen with this team starting quarterbacks. But
exactly.
But, yeah, listen, it was good to hear just some of the impressions from the initial, just getting the guys in the building, getting them in camp, hearing about how Todd Monken handled things. And it was good going through all that here on this edition. Just like that, as always, we have passed an hour, or we're at an hour basically right now. So we're going to wrap things up here on Inside the Browns Beat. Got another great special guest for next week. Fred, you want to announce that?
Yeah, we're going to have Cleveland.com's Dan Lobby. Does a great job over there. This will be his second appearance with us. Talked to him at minicamp. Next week, as I said earlier, the Browns are on the field for OTAs with the veterans on the 20th, next Wednesday. So Dan and I will be out there watching practice, and then we'll come right on here after practice at 7 and talk about it. And so that should be a great one, because you're going to have these rookies that we just talked about with the guys who have been there, and see who shows up for this. Are there going to be any more veterans that maybe haven't been there before? And it'll be interesting to see. So Dan Lobby next week. So be back, and we'll have we'll have the schedule by then, so we'll be able to figure out how many games they're going to actually win.
Yeah, well, oh yeah, we're all going to have our opinions on that as soon as we find out the exact dates and times that they are playing these teams. Then I'm really going to be able to tell you what they're going to do. Now, the Browns schedule comes out tomorrow, so keep your eye out for that. You know, here on the OBR, we're going to have all kinds of coverage of the Browns schedule release, of OTAs. And so just make sure if you are not subscribed over at theobr.com, you go get subscribed over at theobr.com to follow along as this offseason rolls on. And now we have a pretty good look at what the Cleveland Browns are gonna look like out on the field, you know, next year. And now it's just piecing it together, putting in, implementing a new system, new coaches, all that stuff. And again, our guys, including Fred here at the OBR, are going to do their best to keep you posted and in tune to everything going on in Berea, in the building, as we get ready for another season of Cleveland Browns football. We're going to give out our thank yous. First thank you does go to the OBR for hosting us every week. Get to theobr.com, hit subscribe. Next thank you goes out to Channel 19 Zone, Mark Schwab, for coming and hanging out with us tonight, talking about the Cleveland Browns and just giving some of his opinions and insights on everything they got going on. Make sure you're following Mark Schwab online, and make sure you're tuned into what he's doing for Channel 19. And our biggest thank you, as always, goes out to all of you, whether you joined us live here tonight or whether you're going to catch us later, whether you're going to listen to the podcast version, whatever it is, we appreciate you. We thank you. And we love the fact that you come hang out with us inside the Browns beat every single week. That's going to do it for this episode. For Fred Greatham, I am Michael Keefe. We'll see you next week for another riveting edition of Inside the Browns Beat. Until then, as always, go Browns.
Thank you. See you.